Welcome to your Found Family podcast, where we don't just have a heart-to-heart, we connect soul to soul. I'm your host, Lizzie, a certified coaching practitioner who found family outside of blood family. In our Found Family, you are accepted and assured that you are not alone. Subscribe and tune in for educational and empowering soul chats with women from all over the world, talking about well-being, personal growth and development, and mental and emotional health. Welcome back to another episode of Found Family. I'm really excited to have another special guest with me here today, Dr. Deb Lind. We are going to be talking about how to handle the holidays if you've gone no contact. Dr. Deb Lind is a PTSD survivor warrior, Amazon best-selling author, award-winning scholar practitioner, and founder of the global Twitter chat, hashtag PTSD and beyond, and the podcast PTSD and Beyond, which were both launched to provide advocacy, support, and resources, as well as hope, inspiration, education, and empowerment to everyone affected by and with post-traumatic stress disorder. While earning her doctorate, Dr. Deb focused her studies and committed to helping herself overcome the many symptoms of PTSD, all without medication, using herself as the guinea pig and experiment, all the while acting as the researcher, scientist, innovator, and client. The result is Dr. Deb created evidence-based interventions, practical techniques, and a company, Mindful Effect, where she teaches these techniques and interventions for people to develop skills and be self-reliant in managing PTSD. Wow. Dr. Deb, thank you so much. I am so honored and so excited to have you here. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I'm excited too. This is great.
Absolutely. Great. So to start us off, please share with us a little bit more about yourself. I know that was a really amazing bio, and I hope that helps to give our listeners a pretty good understanding of you and your background, but would love to hear more about your story.
You know, what's really funny about the story is it's funny today, but it wasn't funny when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
So my career before becoming Dr. Deb and doing the work that I do with, you know, helping folks overcome challenges with chronic stress and then post-traumatic stress disorder is I worked in business, and one of my kids was at her preschool holiday party, and I literally had a flashback, a childhood flashback. Usually when people have flashback memories, they're still able to function. So meaning they can move, you know, they're coherent. And this one left me paralyzed in the chair. So imagine, you know, you've got this adult woman sitting in the little preschool chair, and my daughter's running to me saying, "Mommy, come, let's go get a cookie." And I couldn't move. And all I was experiencing was a flashback childhood memory that was not positive at all. And from that memory, I was left on the couch for 2 weeks, and I kept thinking, this isn't normal. And something weird is going on here. And I talked with my general practitioner, and he explained what was going on, which was, you know, you're having a, you know, flashback from a childhood memory. And their solution was to give me a prescription and send me on my way and tell me to, you know, go contact some sort of, you know, find a therapist and work through it. And for me, that wasn't an option. But was what was really more difficult was having, you know, little kids and not being able to function. And I wanted to just figure out what the heck I could do. So I went back to school and walked into the university. And at that point, when you're working on your doctorate, you have to have a general studies. And then you get to decide to do what you want to do, right? You're supposed to make some sort of contribution to the world. Mm-hmm. And I and told my dissertation, well, the chair of the program, who ended up being my dissertation chair, that I'm changing everything and wanted to help myself with this flashback of trauma. And what can I do besides just taking a prescription? Because I also looked up the side effects of the prescription that my GP wanted to give me. And I thought, yeah, no, I'll have more health problems than what I have now, you know? And I'm actually not going to what I'm a healthy person. So I knew there had to be another way. And so one of the things that I say often to myself and then also with others is that if there's a solution, I'll find it. And if not, I'll create one myself. So I literally changed my focus on understanding chronic stress from the body and mind. I've studied in Russia, Ukraine, with folks from India, all different parts of the United States, putting myself in outpatient programs, you know, and fully disclosing and saying, hey, I'm here for this reason because I need to understand what is going on. And at the same time, I'm working on my doctorate because I don't like the way that things are. Traditional stuff doesn't work. If it did, then there would be more people who would be feeling better, having healthier lives, healthier relationships, you know, lack of coping with, you know, drugs and alcohol, you know, things like that. And so full disclosure, whenever I went into a program, that's what I did. This is why I'm here. I'm here for myself. I want to learn. And also I want to figure out how we can create something that you can use anywhere, anytime. Because one of the things I experienced too was when you're in line, say at a big box store on a Saturday at 4 o'clock, there isn't a 1-800 call me. You can't call your therapist or your physician. Mm-hmm. Connect with them when you need it. And that actually happened to me too. Standing in line.
Oh.
So I thought, oh my gosh, now what? What's the next flashback that's going to come about that I need to tackle? And that was over 7 years ago. So now fast forward 7 years, gosh, you know, it's part of the growth part now. It's about doing the things that I know are healthy and constructive. I know that we're going to talk today about no contact. How did I get myself to be at that place and help other people now? Because when you can say that you've done what somebody else wishes, hopes, dreams, thinking about, even maybe in the closet they're thinking about doing it, and they can speak with somebody who's actually done it confidentially and be real about it. What did you experience? What were some of the emotions? How did you get yourself to that place? How did you handle criticism from people? What did you respond? How did you respond when people said, what are you doing for Christmas this year, Deb? You know, what do you say, right? Because we have all these things that go in our minds, and now to be able to help people do that. And then, even when they, you know, send an email, or I did a workshop recently where a gal said, I've been doing this every day since we met last year and my life has changed. And I actually just met her husband last week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and they're doing a one of their dreams that she had was they bought their dream house. So after being married for 25 years, they finally, you know, did that. And she's like, you really did change my life. So, I mean, it's just extremely rewarding from where things were, though, you know, those years ago to where they are now, and helping people figure out how to do that too.
That's amazing. You are such a beautiful human inside and out. We're so grateful.
Oh, thank
you. You are such a gift. Truly, that is absolutely amazing. And I know that for my listeners who know about, you know, my struggles having dealt with like narcissistic upbringing and having a mom who has had that, you know, impact on my life. I know that when you and I first started speaking about the no contact, like this was something that was such a foreign concept. So I know that this, especially leading up to the holidays, is going to be a very, like a really powerful wake-up call for people. And so, you know, with that word holiday, of course, it really can be a trigger for many of us. And again, going and visiting family who we haven't seen in a while, or going to someone who has caused traumatic stress or given us anxiety, et cetera. So as the holidays are approaching, how can we prepare for this time of year?
You know, that's a great question. For folks that have a background of a narcissistic parent or an uncle or an aunt, that is always the one who just knows how to push your buttons, or the brother or sister who's, you know, behaved in that way. People, the closer that Halloween comes around, the more anxiety people experience. By Halloween, the benchmarks are Halloween, Thanksgiving, and then right now, a couple weeks before Christmas, or even, the, you know, depending on what holiday people are celebrating, the anxiety amplifies.
Right.
The reviewing and going over and being hypervigilant, you know, meaning preparing. And the energy and the focus, though, is preparing based on best experience as opposed to how can I make this holiday the best for me? What does that look like? What are the steps that I need to take? And what's my exit plan?
Mm-hmm.
So the way that we can make the holiday, well, yes, the holiday in itself is a trigger for me. I mean, there are many executives even that I work with that will say, you know what, there's this one uncle that I've never enjoyed the holiday. I want to at least enjoy it with my family. And then when I'm done and I've had enough, how can I then leave? Because of, you know, not wanting to have someone say, oh, you've only been here for so long, you know, that kind of thing. What can we do? So the word holiday in itself does trigger. And the reason why it triggers is because it brings up past memories. It brings up past emotions and feelings. And so if we had simply the memory, which is the information, without the emotion, most people would be okay with going back to, say, you know, visit family. But because we do have the emotion and the feeling attached to the memory, that's where the triggering part comes in. And
wow.
The closer we get to the holiday, the more the anxiety is amplified, as well as the unhealthy coping. And I can tell you right now that I've been working a lot. And so people will say, well, you know, why are you up so late? What are you doing? And when you work with people all over the world, whether it's in Australia or in the UK, you're in different time zones. And so I was jokingly actually doing this last night, posting the little Dove chocolate positive affirmations. Somebody DM'd me and said, so how much of the bag have you eaten? I thought, that is very mindful because, yes, you know what? I do like chocolate and Dove chocolates in particular. And
they're
those
the
little
best.
Affirmations are so cute, but I thought it was
they
so
are.
Nice. See, even people out there are like, hey, you know what? I know that you're not going to want to eat that half a bag because you're awake and you're working, but, you know, and so I say that in just because everybody who's listening now, if you were to answer to this question to yourself, what is your coping thing that you go to?
Mm.
Everybody's got one right now. We all know what we're doing, right? And so we need to be really mindful the closer we get to the holiday with our triggers, how we're managing those reflexive and reactive, you know, action. But the holiday can be very triggering, of course. But there's things
Absolutely.
That we can do, though, to help either to mitigate it completely or to lessen it so at least we can enjoy ourselves.
Right. Absolutely. And that's a really great transition. I know that in what you just shared, the word preparation, prepare, came up. And so how do you know whether or not you are properly prepared?
Well, I can say one thing is that no plan is a plan to fail. And I know people know that phrase. There's a difference between I know it and versus I know it and I apply it.
Mm.
So how do we know that our plan is successful? When a person plans and they use their plan, that in itself is a success. Now, whether the outcome of the plan matches the desired outcome, like, oh, I really wish that, you know, my sister would have just left me alone and not said these things. When we evaluate and reflect on the plan that people do put in place and review it and say, okay, so what are the things that were, you know, your plus? What did you really like about it that happened? What are the things that you can be proud of yourself? And in itself, just having a plan is using it as a success. And when we use it, that's when we know what did work, what didn't work, what would I change next time? Because one plan can be used for many different situations. So let's hypothetically say a listener is, okay, I want to put together a plan for the holiday. And then maybe after the new year, there's a client meeting at work and they have to get together with, you know, a coworker who, same thing, just pushes their buttons or you know, that's just an example of a situation. But everything that people learn can be reused and repurposed. So it's not that I use this one thing and then it gets put on the shelf. No, we want this to be developed into a skill. So your plan then becomes over time that you use it and you use it and you adapt it to refine it. Again, going back of asking what worked, what didn't work, what would I do differently, what would I like to change, what do I want to keep, and then you reuse it again. It becomes then a developed skill. So what starts out as, hey, I got this plan, then becomes something that I don't even need to think about when I'm going to the airport, because guess what? I already know what my plan is and I know it works.
Mm-hmm.
What works for me, not for other people. So what I mean by that is our plan that we put together is something that's designed so it works for myself, for the person who's using it. It is not a plan that is, oh, it works for you know, say like my narcissistic, you know, father didn't say something to me. It's really a plan for ourselves. So this is an internal self-caring plan that we use for ourselves. It's a way that we develop a skill for ourselves. And I mention that because sometimes people think that I'm doing this because I don't want someone else's behavior to be the way that it is. And that's not the concept at all. That's not the purpose. Mm, the purpose
right.
isn't to change someone else. The purpose is so your life can be better, regardless of whatever they do or whatever situation you're in. It's always to benefit you.
Wow. I got to tell you, I'm sitting here with goosebumps because everything you're saying is really resonating with me. And I'm thinking back to, you know, you mentioned Thanksgiving. And for me personally, I will not be around for the Christmas holiday. I'm leaving the country. And so for me, the family time happened for Thanksgiving. And I didn't necessarily have a, like, plan per se, but I do know that every single time prior to this past Thanksgiving, every holiday was more challenging because, as I'm sure many can relate, you know, when you're thinking about the good time, as you said before, you know, when we're associating past memories with feelings, sometimes when we think, oh, okay, this time's going to be different or this time's going to be fun, and then those little moments sort of creep into your mind. You're like, yeah, but remember when this happened? And then that's when the triggers start. So I personally didn't plan for, like, this Thanksgiving. However, I did things differently this Thanksgiving. So rather than, as you just shared, like, you know, trying to change my mom or trying to change the way that she was behaving or acting or whatever, I just – As time is going by, I am certainly coming to terms with the fact that her personality is just, she's a lot of the time, I think she's not even able to control what she does and says because of having narcissistic personality disorder.
Right.
I actually told her this time. I brought it to her attention, and it was something that I had been talking about with my therapist. And so, you know, the plan that I had, like, was to tell her, but I didn't really know much about how it was going to happen or like how it was going to go down or anything like that. So this is a question for our listeners who, you know, might be sitting here right now thinking, okay, well, I didn't see family yet. Like this next 2 weeks will really be when I'm going to see that person who triggers me or whatever. There are some like examples of how to plan if telling someone, you know, like bringing something like that to their attention is either too much or not appropriate yet or anything like that. Like what's something that, you know, could help someone plan as they're, you know, bracing for the next 2 weeks.
Right. So there's a few things that I'm hearing here. One is about a plan, but a basic general plan. And the other one is that I'm hearing is, you know, what can somebody do, if at all, to, you know, confront, say, the person who is, if, you know, we're saying narcissistic, you know, who's narcissistic, they behave that way, or maybe who's a bully or who's just pushing our buttons because they know that they can just to get a rouse out of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's two things that I'm hearing. The first thing, first and foremost, would be to create a plan for somebody, and you know, for myself, you know, or the person that we're, you know, our listener. And what they can do is they can first ask themselves, what is actually causing the anxiety or what is actually causing them to be nervous, anxious, don't want to do it? You know, you have that. I know when I say this because children are so very simplistic when you talk with them. You ever talk to a toddler and you ask them to do something, they say no. And then you say, why not? And they say, you know, mommy, I just don't want to do it. I just don't want to do it. And we still, as adults, have that very simplistic way of thinking. I just don't want to do it. I'd rather avoid it, and there's something about it I don't want to do. So when a person has the awareness of, just write it down. What are the three things that are linked to, I don't want to do it because? I don't want to do it because of the way it makes me feel. I don't want to do it because I don't like the aftermath. I don't want to do it because it's all, whatever it is, it's fake. I just don't want to do it anymore. Whatever those components are, okay? And then the next thing to ask is, what would you like to do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd like to be there for a few minutes because I really want to see my dad, or I really want to be there for a few minutes because I want to see my brother and my sister, but I don't want to deal with my mom. Now, when doing the second phase, and I just added in there, but I don't want to steal my mother, we want to cut that part out. We want to focus on the second aspect of developing the plan is, why is it that you do want to go? There's a reason why you don't want to go. So write those things out, you know, 3 to 5 things. The second thing is, why do you want to go? And same thing, write those out, but don't add in the, but I don't want to deal with. It is just purely and simply, again, if I'm a kid or even a, you know, adult, I'm saying, why do I want to go? Well, I really want to, you know, see grandmother or whatever those things are, put it down. I want to be around my family. It can be something as simple as that. And then you ask yourself, okay, so when, going back to list one, when those things happen, instead of saying, how do they make me feel? The third thing is, and the third column is, what would I like to do about column one? Okay, and it's not, you know, taking a snowball and throwing it at somebody. Or, you know what I mean? Or like a dish or something. But it, seriously, it is about, if in an ideal world, what would happen? And some people at that point say, I would really like to sit down with my family and say, we can't behave like this anymore. It's so hurtful. And I agree with those conversations, but those conversations happen at a different time and place because we also have to think about timing things, right?
Right.
Can we bring all that up when emotions for everybody are going to be high at the holidays? So the ideal outcome is I enjoy myself. I get to have what I would like to experience in column two. And then how do I make that happen? So we establish a plan that are safe boundaries. So like a safe boundary, for example, could be, all right, I really want to go see my Uncle Bob. I don't want to deal with my mom's drama. And what I'm going to do is contact Uncle Bob, make sure what time is he going to be there. So I know when he's going to be there. I'm going to arrive either a few minutes before or a few minutes after. And I'm only going to stay a certain amount of time. My boundary is for myself. I'm going to enjoy my holiday and I'll stay there for an hour and a half. That's my boundary.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I'm taken off. It won't be guilt. It won't be somebody persuading. Now, the caveat is, and people have asked, well, what if things are going really well? If they're going really well, then you have the power to adjust your boundary. And in this boundary, it is about a timeline boundary. It isn't about I'm going to tolerate behavior or I'm going to allow somebody to be mean. It is literally about I'm agreeing for myself to stay an hour and a half, and if things are going well, I will choose to stay longer. And then in column four, it is the bottom line. It is the what if, again, not when, but what if. So we're not predicting it. We're saying I'm preparing. What if something happens and I really just don't want to stay? Then you can either plan with a friend where you can text them and you have a code word with your friend, like onion. It's one word and it's simple, right? Onion. And you text your friend and it says onion. They text you back and it says onion. You can look at your phone and say, you know what? I've got a friend in need and I need to take care of this. It's great to see everybody. And you practice, Lizzie. You practice everything you're going to say. So that's column five. So four is you set your boundaries. You're in control of your boundaries. And then five is practice. Practice what you're going to say. And it's three quick things. You know what? I have a friend in need. I need to take off. It was great seeing everybody. Mom, I love you. Uncle Bob, it was great to see you. Everybody have a great holiday. And if someone's like, you know, saying, what do you mean you're taking off? What do you mean you're leaving? You can just say, you know what? I really have to get going. It was great to see everybody. You just keep reiterating what you've practiced. And you mentioned something earlier about hope. It was about hope and, you know, wanting and wishing and hoping that things would be another way. And this goes back to the second part of the original question, which is, do I at that point bring up to or confront, say, a narcissistic parent and say, you're nothing but a narcissistic, you know, parent? We think about timing. You know, timing is really important. That is a conversation that is, again, practice. Just don't, you know, wing it. I think one of the challenges that we had at the holidays that goes beyond triggering and it attacks our emotional state is, I call it toe dipping or dangling of the carrot. So with narcissistic personality disorder and people who aren't clinically diagnosed, but they have tendencies to be narcissistic, they have this circle of behavior, right? They're nice 1 minute. Mm-hmm. Then you took the bait, right? They're dangling the carrot. Everything's great, wonderful, complimentary, all this other stuff. As soon as you take the carrot, you've taken their bait. You know, they've got you hooked.
Yep.
And then before you know it, the shoe drops. And it's the same cycle. And then when you bring it up to them, they will behave in a way that is, you know, gaslighting and making you feel like you're crazy. Like, no, that's not what happened. We can have the conversation of, this stops now, and it stopped with me. I won't tolerate these behaviors any longer. But that's a conversation that happens different than at, you know, like Thanksgiving table or Christmas table.
Agreed. And I should have prefaced by saying that this type of conversation was by no means new. Our family is very open to talking about our feelings and our emotions. And, you know, my brother lives in Florida. My parents are, you know, in a different state. I'm in New York. So it's like we're all in different parts of the east side of the country, if you will. And I, you know, these types of conversations have happened multiple times where both my brother and I, for example, in the case of my mom, have brought up, you know, tendencies and commented on those tendencies with specific examples. And for a long time, it was like, you know, in one ear, out the other ear. But I think that the last time that we saw each other was over Easter. And we planted, both my brother and I planted a lot of seeds to have prepared for that conversation. And truthfully, my mom's dad has narcissistic personality disorder as well. My uncle passed, did, and he was diagnosed. So, you know, it's much more apparent to me. And I think that for our listeners who, again, either have the opportunity to, like, either plant these seeds. I love what you shared about having, like, keywords with people. I think one of the examples that came to mind is, like, you know, when you're, like, I know my roommates have done this before, like, when you're going on a date with someone new and you kind of tell your roommates, okay, here's the name of this person I'm going on a date with. Like, if you don't hear from me by this time, like, give me a call or shoot me a text. Or if I give you this keyword, that means that I'm, like, not loving this date. Like, please text me and get me out of here type of thing. So it's interesting because as you shared that, I was like, I honestly never thought to have something like that among the family. But almost subconsciously, I did have something similar with my brother because the two of us understand how she is during family situations. And now since Thanksgiving was just the four of us and Easter was just the four of us, I don't know what it's going to be like for Christmas because they're all coming to New York and the whole family is like in this area. So I don't know. Now I feel bad for my brother because I don't know if he would have someone that he could kind of play, you know, this, like, tag with, but I'm now going to share with him that maybe with, like, one of our cousins or something, he gets to a point, because my brother gets more, like, heated than I do about certain things, and then I get more heated about other things than he does, and so to be able to share this message with him and really help continue to spread this awareness, like, hey, if you're feeling this way, you do have the control to say, someone needs me, I need to leave. You know, I love what you just shared because, you know, first and foremost, of course, it resonated a ton with me. I'm super excited to share this with my brother, and I'm confident that, you know, for those listening, that it's going to resonate with them as well. So I'm truly grateful. Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely.
Really powerful.
The cool thing about this, too, is, you know, we talked a little bit about this earlier in our conversation, is one of the things that when I make and create tools for people to develop skills. They're evidence-based, so meaning they're rooted in the science. It's just not that I, you know, like, oh, that sounds like a great idea. I think we'll try that. But the key thing is that you can use them anywhere. So it's, you can use it if you're going on a date or if you're going to, you know, meet with family or, you know, you're in a team meeting. I mean, that's the whole point.
That's
so you develop a skill that you can use wherever you're at. no matter what the situation is. And the other thing that I want folks to listen and understand is that when they develop the skill and they do it and it's automatic, they're not thinking about it. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, like, oh, I've got to do the planning. But they get to the point of they used it so many times, it just happens. Like, they can snap their finger and they've memorized it and they've got it and they knew it, they know it, and they just do it. Then they become self-reliant.
Yeah.
Meaning they're not calling a EAP line. There's no, oh, my God, what do I do now? I need a lifeline, a life jacket, something. So they become self-reliant. And when folks get to that self-reliancy part, then what I've seen is a huge increase of, wow, you know what? I really did do that. Self-confidence, belief in self, and then they want to share with other people, which I love, because the more that we can share what works with others, then we can help other people who have tried other things that maybe haven't worked. I do want to touch base again a little bit about the, you know, when we can say to someone, hey, knock it off, I really don't like that. Most families have talked to, you know, or brought up the elephant in the room. It's been exposed. Everybody knows about it. People have talked about it. What happens, though, is that the elephant has been addressed but not resolved. There's a difference between addressing something and saying, like, hey, your behaviors are not cool. This is really hurtful. Why do you continue to do this? Just because it's learned behavior doesn't mean you can't stop. Now, do you want to stop or do you not want to stop? If you don't want to stop, then at least you're, you know, being open and set, and we know what the expectation is. But no, if you choose not to stop, I'm not going to be okay with that. That's, you know, so, and however people want to communicate it. So if there have been families that, you know, like it has been talked about and talked about and talked about, sometimes things escalate to a point where, yeah, at Christmas, someone's saying, you know what, I have absolutely had it with this behavior. I will not expose my children to this and continue a legacy like this. I'm going to stop it now. And I choose to be the cycle breaker and a legacy builder, and you guys can continue on with learned behaviors and patterns that are toxic and narcissistic and that are unhealthy. But it stops with me, you know?
Right.
And believe me, in my story, I did those things with my biological family. And I flew back out to Detroit and had a family meeting with everybody and said, why do people allow this to continue? Why? And I was an adult with kids. You know, I wanted to know why. You know, and what was the responses were so inadequate. They were excuses.
Yep.
And I actually said that I'm like, not with my kids. Because I made myself that promise when I was 16, and I'm 51 now. And I said if I ever had kids, not with my kids, it stops with me. What's interesting for listeners to know, too, is that scientifically and statistically, the person who is considered the scapegoat, so the one who carries all the baggage, who is thrown everything, is statistically the person who breaks the cycle. And you can have more than one scapegoat in a family. But getting back to the preparation, there's a sense of empowerment because while we can't control the people, and I know people know this quote too, you can't control the people, but you can control yourself. And that is so true. And when you stick to the boundary of your plan and see things changing, not other people changing, but things change for you, then the sense of empowerment is, again, it's heartwarming to witness. And when people share, you know, how it went, and you can see, like, the relief, and you can hear it on the phone. You can see it over, depending on where they're at and how they're calling you, or even just an email. It can be, I mean, it's just like this, wow, you're so happy for somebody. I mean, it's like a really good gift to give to a person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just as this episode will be a gift to people. And so I think that for those who might be in a very similar situation to me where I haven't gone no contact, I personally feel that at this point, because I have brought out the elephant in the room, and we've all pointed it out, and I've addressed it, and, like, I am setting better boundaries for myself, et cetera, like, I am able to better manage visits and things like that for the time being. But, you know, the question of the hour, which is about going no contact, you know, obviously to have that as something that I will have in my toolbox as like a plan, you know, that if it does reach a point where things don't change or I'm still not feeling secure or self-reliant and in whatever way, like to know that I have that as something that I could go to is really comforting. And so, you know, what if, for example, well, I guess I have a few questions about going no contact. So the first is going no contact even possible? For example, someone who had, you know, a parent or a sibling, I would say that the immediate family is probably one of the most challenging to go no contact, especially because, and I believe you've shared a few times, like the word guilt and, you know, of course, having expectations that, you know, it's family and it's blood family, blah, blah, blah. Like there's a lot of guilt tripping that's happened, you know, even in my family about all of this. So first and foremost, is going no contact even possible, especially for someone who needs to go no contact with someone in the immediate family?
The answer is yes, because it's a decision. So we have many different choices when it comes to dealing with challenges and difficult people. We can have limitations. We can always speak with somebody on the phone. We have a plethora of choices, and we decide to try certain choices and see how they work. Going no contact is a really difficult decision and a choice to pick, because there's a lot of there's a process of grief that goes with it. I'll say it's not easy. There's a process of grief, and at the same time, there's a process of relief, like freedom.
Yeah,
I even have on my wall in my office. What did I get? What's it called? And big, you know, it's one of these 3M sticky flip chart things.
Mm-hmm.
And I have on there, it says, what did I get? And I outlined it. And going no contact is a decision that when people do it, it's something that is like, I wouldn't say a last resort. You get to a point where you realize that with a narcissistic person in particular, that their life is so wrapped up in hurt and pain, because they really are in hurt and pain,
mm-hmm.
that they've made the decision to not help themselves.
Right.
And you have to learn to, not learn, but you have to have the awareness and realization that you have your own life and you need to love yourself more than somebody who wants to actually destroy your life.
Mm.
And when you make a decision to go no contact, there's a grief process and a relief. So the grief process is, you know, the hope factor really is, I finally now see that person for who they truly are and for who they have decided to be. And I'm grateful that, that things in my life are improving because of the decision that I made to go no contact. You know, if you have a commitment and the commitment is to have healthy relationship and to not accept abuse in your life, then that means no abuse from anybody, regardless mm-hmm. of their family or not. And society puts these social expectations, whether it's religious, you know, teachings, if you will, or socially expected norms and values. And when people have tried to impose those shaming judgments my way, I've actually said, well, parents aren't supposed to be abusive.
Mm.
I don't owe that woman my life. She gave me life. There's a difference.
Right.
I don't owe her my life. She gave me life. And so when you make a promise to yourself that I will not tolerate abuse from anyone, that means anybody. And if someone makes a decision to not change abusive behaviors, then that's when you need to evaluate and say, well, I either continue going down this path and I don't know how much hurtful it's going to be, because eventually it is going to do something to me. The emotional damage, I mean, scientifically, that's what I studied. I know what emotional and mental damage from abuse does to a person. And it links to all kinds of physical ailments, heart attack, diabetes. I didn't want that for myself, let alone to destroy my own children and have that impact. And so going no contact isn't something lightly. I mean, I will say that one of the things after I did do it, and years later, I wish I would have done it sooner. But I wish I would have done it sooner before I had my kids. Because I think that for myself, I would have been healthier in the mind than having a trigger when my daughter was in preschool. You know, that is something that I wish I would have done. But as far as regretting going no contact, because I've had people say, oh, my gosh, you know, and most of my family is deceased. So the family that I consider family, you know, may their memory be eternal, they're not alive. So it's a very small, you know, group of people anyway. I mean, immediate family, there's only a couple, including her. And I will preface something, too, is that one of the things I'm most proud of is even after 6 years of no contact and working with therapists on narcissistic child abuse with a narcissistic mother, I called her to tell her, you're a narcissistic child abuser. I actually did it. And that was so empowering to take my power back, because I thought to myself, is there anything left undone from the no contact? Anything? Because when you go no contact too, I was thinking about this before we got on the podcast here. No contact means no contact. It doesn't mean you go search their name on the internet. It doesn't mean you ghost their Facebook page. It doesn't mean you're checking out their Twitter. You literally go no contact. It's not that I'm, you know, calling a cousin saying, hey, what's going on? No, it is literally going no contact. And at the same time, you take your power back. And that was what I said to myself. Is there anything that is left? Anything undone? And I thought, you know what? Because something had happened and I was like, I've been no contact with you. Why are you bugging me? You know? It's like, I'm not calling you. Why are you bugging me? What is it that you... And I thought to myself, you know, Deb, come on, you're Dr. Deb. You know what's going on. So then I thought, all right, the only last thing I've got is to tell you, or not you person, but, you know, to say, is to call it out. You're a narcissistic child abuser, and I'm glad that I did it, and I totally took my power back. Do I think I could have done that early on doing this work? No, because I wasn't ready with the part of no contact, which was going through the grief. I think for me, the biggest thing was the grief, because when you don't have family that's alive and you're like, this is it, you know, this is it. There isn't anybody else. Now what do you do, right? And the cool thing is I get to do any freaking thing I want. There isn't anybody saying, you can't have your hair like that. Oh my gosh, are you ever going to grow your hair long again before I die? You know, and I'm a Greek American, so there's a lot of like cultural things that, you know, parents say, you know, and I hear it from other Greek families, but it's not in the same tone. You know, it has a different meaning. And I say that because every family's got their cultural stuff too.
Right.
And you get to do whatever you want. So early on, there were people who were like, oh my gosh, you know, we got to have Deb over for Christmas. There was one time I had so many freaking invitations and I turned them all down. They're like, what are you doing for Christmas? I'm like, man, I am doing spa time. I'm like, I had all my menus planned out.
Yes.
It was time for me. It literally was just, I love reading books. And I remember I had a wonderful flat in Minneapolis. had all these, you know, lights hanging and everything. And one of my friends, I told him, I'm like, I'm totally cool. I'm totally good. He shows up and I had like these funky slippers on and new jammies and my robe and candles and I was doing a mask and my nails, you know, and I had all this food.
That's
I had like
awesome.
Seafood and everything. I'm like, Troy, what are you doing here? He's like, oh my gosh, you really are doing spa. I'm like, yeah. He's like, no, I want you to go to my sister's with me. I'm like, no.
Good for you.
And I'm like, no, I really meant what I said. It wasn't a, oh, feel sorry for her. She's by herself. You get to do whatever you want to do. And for some people, they've never had that in their life where you can do whatever you want. If you want to go and have duck for dinner at a Chinese restaurant on Christmas Day, guess what? You can.
You can.
You know what? If you want to go to Thailand for Christmas, and guess what? You can't. And
yep.
I've taken my kids out of the country, too, for Christmas or rented a cabin. And people are like, oh, my gosh, you're not going to be home. I'm like, yeah, we're not. We're taking off. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
We're out. What
yep.
are you doing? It's like I can do whatever I want now. Whatever.
Oh, yeah, that is just like, that's like a breathe in, breathe out moment. Like for anyone listening right now, I feel like that's just like, we all need to like take like a moment to just be like, because that is so beautiful. And I love how you said like taking power back. And so for, it's so beautiful to be able to soul talk with you about this topic and having this very similar upbringing in childhood, you know, being an Italian American, I also thought, you know, oh, there's certain things mom says because she's Italian, or, oh, you know, she's made me believe this, 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 and this, and then forget it when religion was mixed into it. I mean, it was.
Oh, I can relate to this.
Oh, my mm-hmm. God. I mean, I had scrupulosity to the absolute maximum capacity, and like the only way that I was able to liberate myself from that, because the way that my therapist said it, she's like, you have obsessive compulsive disorder as a way to cope with your anxiety. And I'm like, wow, I never considered it that way. But really it was because I didn't have control or power over anything. There were times where even something as simple as like, mom, I'm hungry. No, you think you're hungry, but really you're this. And it's like, really? I think I'm hungry. Like,
oh, yeah.
You emotionally get, you know, beaten down. And it's so hard for people to even, you know, understand what that emotional abuse even looks like, because it's not physical. Like, oh, you have to thank God that your parents are not X, Y, or Z, and they don't come home and do this, this, and this. And it's like, all right, yeah, I understand that. And I feel very blessed that, but having a, you know, abuse in another way, it's still an abuse. And as you said earlier, it still takes a toll on your well-being and your body, like all of the illnesses and things that happen as a result of stress and anxiety. I mean, that is proof right there. So it's harder to see someone who is going through the abuse too. And I think that for a lot of my family members, they were able to see it and acknowledge it. But I didn't believe it because, again, with religion in the mix, it was like, well, this is what God wants for us. And this is what, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it got to a point where, you know, I will remember forever that in April of 2016, we were, and I shared this story in another podcast episode, but you know what happened on that day was that I reached my limit. I was like, I can't deal with this anymore. And on April, I believe it was the 12th, 2016, we were in the parking lot of a McDonald's. We got out, we were all bickering in the car, and I looked at mom and I said, I'm done. And she didn't know what I meant, because I wasn't ready to talk about things then, but you know, this was like 3 years ago. But what I meant in my own heart was, I'm done trying to impress you. And the note that I left on my phone to myself, which started the notes to self, which is, you know, what inspired me to do the notes to self segment, was, I am done trying to impress my mom. Like, I am done mm-hmm. trying to be this person that she's been wanting me to be. And then, you know, shortly after, moved to Brooklyn, got my tats, got my piercings, dyed my hair white, like totally embraced my inner hippie and like a bohemian spirit, and just like became free. And
I love
it was
it.
Such a beautiful moment, because it really was just taking in what you shared, where it was giving myself that power back. Unfortunately, there were, you know, other holidays prior to like this past Easter, which again were like really difficult. But again, having this understanding of, you know, and this is also this beautiful, like, awareness, this self-awareness of asking yourself these questions, like, what are your triggers, what are your anxieties, and knowing that, you know, ways to handle the holidays is to go no contact if this is something that you know is going to benefit you. And so, you know, my two other questions in regards to no contact is, firstly, you know, what, well, we kind of went over, like, what a holiday would look like for someone who has gone no contact. But the second two questions is, you know, what if that person tries to reengage or make contact with you? And so as a result, how can someone stay no contact? Because I think that could also be like a really big challenge for someone.
Yeah. You know what? People need to understand that when we establish boundaries, that a person who's narcissistic or a controlling parent that way, they're not going to like it. And they'll do and say whatever it takes to get your attention. And that those actions can be anything from threat to somebody's dying or dead and that person isn't, right? So you just got tricked once again, right? You know, when we decide to go no contact, it's a promise to ourselves. It's not a promise to anybody else. It's a promise that we make to ourselves. And so people will often hear me say, if we can't make a promise to ourselves, who can we make a promise to?
Wow.
So when you go no contact, just, you know, be mindful and remember that that's a promise to yourself. It's like a gift to self. You put the gift under the Christmas tree, and instead of saying, you know, to Dr. Deb from Santa, you know, to Lizzie from Santa, it says to Lizzie from Lizzie, to Deb from Deb.
Wow.
So it's a gift to yourself. How do we maintain no contact? When you go no contact, I mean, again, you're taking in consideration all the things that you can think of as well as the things that you can't. So, I mean, you know, my way of thinking is hypervigilant. I'm really good at spatial puzzles, and I was really good at strategy initiatives because I could think of and see things that other people couldn't, and I wanted to say, yeah, but that's a positive attribute for post-traumatic stress disorder. Like, I can see stuff that you can't because that's what I had to do to keep myself safe as a kid, right? So I say that as we look through every possible, you know, every possible scenario, and so I would ask myself questions before going no contact. Well, what if somebody needed a blood transfusion? Would you do it? Well, what if somebody needed, like, you know, donor organ? Would you do it? You know? I mean, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And literally when you go no contact, you have no contact. You know, I've made the agreement with the kid's dad that if for some reason there was one of those, someone's going to die and needs blood, I would only do it if it was through a third party. I would still maintain my no contact.
Wow.
You know, but otherwise, I don't wish them anything bad to happen. Of course not. You know, of course not. What I do want is I want freedom and happiness for myself without,
Absolutely.
You know, a life pure, you know, and free of that type of abuse, and to have a clean slate for my kids. That's my goal. As well as to help others that are listening, like, oh my gosh, what do I do? Because believe me, there have been people who have said, I can't do what you've done. There's a gal who lives not too far from me that she just can't. Mm-hmm. And her mom and her spouse, and I'm like, I don't know what you're going to do because your child is going to learn this as being normal, and that this is dysfunctional normal means it's okay to a kid. They don't understand that it's dysfunctional normal and not okay.
Right.
But to maintain no contact, doesn't matter what the email it is, doesn't matter the emergency, and they'll bring in other people. They'll bring in other family members, friends, people that know you.
Oh, yes. There is
people who you don't know, business associates, made-up relationships. They will do whatever it takes to get an arouse and to get attention, because attention is attention, whether
right.
it's good or bad. You know, and, yeah, those things have happened too, you know, medical maladies that, like leukemia and cancers that were non-existent and didn't exist, and it was all just to manipulate and control.
Wow.
So when you go no contact, it literally is, hey, this is a promise I made to myself, and I'm sticking to it.
That's incredible. I will say that there was another wave of goosebumps that came over me when you gave that beautiful, vivid imagery of putting a gift under the tree and saying to Deb from Deb, to Lizzie from Lizzie. I'm feeling very led to put something like an action after listening to this podcast that will start, like, you know, even if it's like a new Twitter like hashtag or something about like hashtag gift to myself or something, where we can further encourage people that after learning more about no contact and getting, you know, more information about all of the things that we just went over, what they could do next. I think that, you know, even like putting something physical under the tree or whatever is being celebrated, because for those who don't celebrate Christmas, just being able to do this in like the physical world, because when we think a thought, it's still, you know, it's real because it's in our mind. But I think that there's something so powerful about taking like an action item and bringing that into the real world. So I know that for me, like this really just gave me the inspiration to do this. Like, even if you're taking, like, I don't know, it doesn't have to be like anything specific. Even if you're wrapping a ball of paper with another piece of paper to just put your name on it and say to Lizzie from Lizzie and just leave it there, it's still the symbol that you're giving yourself a gift. I think that would be like a really beautiful next step for someone to take after listening to this episode. And then, you know, just knowing that they're not alone, you know, in whatever it is that they're going through right now, that's really like a beautiful, again, transition into the final kind of question about all of this, is that, you know, the mission of this podcast is to highlight the resilience of women who are living with, you know, mental illness, who are overcoming things like this, who are, you know, despite the traumas and everything, like, we overcome and we overcome together. And it's to empower women and to let other women know that they are not alone. And so we are here for you as a community, available on Twitter. You know, I'm going to have all of Dr. Deb's information in the description of this podcast episode. And to you, Dr. Deb, for you, if you could share just like one final thought about just how we all can overcome this stress and really take all of the things that you just went over and be able to apply them and feel, you know, empowered going into this season.
You know, the last thing that I would say to people, and this is actually quite emotional for me, because you mentioned about getting a tattoo, and I'm going to be meeting my best friend after the new year, and I'm getting this tattoo, which is Remember Who You Are.
Wow.
And I have a bracelet that I wear that says Remember Who You Are, and just recently put those out on our Etsy page, Remember Who You Are, because what I have found, especially for women, is that we have so many expectations and so many things and people come before we do. And when we finally get to a place of, you know what, I matter, my voice matters, who I am matters, my existence matters, I matter, all of me matters. And we have those moments where we forget. So how can we remember? We can remember through bonding with other women who will remind us, which I'm blessed to have a best friend who will remind me every once in a while and say, hey, you got your bracelet on? What are you doing? You know? And same thing when I'm with other women. Yeah, and the cool thing is we do come together in a sisterhood. But the one thing that I would say to folks is remember who you are. No matter what you face, no matter what challenge, what someone's saying, what someone did, what someone didn't do, remember who you are. Because when we remember who we truly are, I mean at our gut and heart, who we are, that's when the feist and the fire and the fuel get relit in somebody. And that's when I've seen women stand tall and are not a victim, not just a survivor, but really, truly that warrior moving to champion, moving to hero. And I love seeing women who take their power back and they say, yeah, you know what? I remember who I am. That's what I would say to people. Remember who you are.
Wow. I'm going to cry. I'm like really emotional right now. That was like so beautiful. And this right here is exactly why I call these episodes Soul Chats, is because it is not on like that first level of conversation. It's literally soul to soul communicating, vibing on the same frequency, supporting each other and lifting one another up. And it's just such a like, I'm feeling like just all the vibes of the universe right now. It is just absolutely amazing. And again, truly, you are such a blessing. I'm so grateful for everything that you are doing. And I can't wait for everyone to listen to this and for all of us to remember who we are and to step into this season with, you know, a new set of eyes and a heart that feels full and a spirit that's excited, you know, and just to feel that sense of joy and hope and excitement that you know, we all should be feeling during the holidays. Like that is really what this time of year is all about. And to be able to feel that again is again, in and of itself, a gift. We're going into 2020, which is insane. So it's like, this is the most important time to really like prepare for a new era, really. So it's that this is just
a new vision. 2020. Oh no, thank you. Oh my gosh.
Absolutely.
Thank
you
so much.
Of course. And so as I shared before, I will have, please check out the description of this episode, Dr. Deb's Twitter and website will all be there, links to go check out. Please follow her, check out her book. And Dr. Deb, what other places can we find you and support you? I know you said you have an Etsy store. I'll have that link as well.
Yeah, I've got Twitter account at Deborah Lynn, DEBRALINDH. And then there's also Instagram where I post some other little nuggets and goodies. So I try mixing things up. So there's people who really like Twitter, people who really like Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Folks can reach out on LinkedIn if they'd like, because I, with a business background, it's really wonderful to come and work with organizations that have women's group and that are doing diversity and inclusion and empowerment for, you know, training within organizations. So people can check me out on those three areas too.
Fantastic. Wonderful. Well, thank you again. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm so grateful. I wish
you
a happy holiday.
Oh, you too.
Thank
you too.
So much.
Travel to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this week's episode. Be sure to hit that subscribe button and tune in next week for a new topic. To help spread the good vibes, please share this episode with friends and family, or if you share on social, be sure to tag me at Coach Lizzie.